This is an encouragement that we have for all of our community, that we would see our faith not just stay within here, but continue to spread, because the love of Jesus needs to spread. You know, Phil mentioned that at SYG, some young people came to trust Jesus for the first time. Wonderfully exciting. I'm not sure if you're aware, but I shared with our leadership after our kids' holiday celebration service last week, a young boy put his trust in Jesus for the first time. A family exploring faith. It's really exciting to hear. Like Cam, I was incredibly encouraged when I listened to guys share their testimony a few weeks ago. It was wonderful. On Alpha on Tuesday nights at the moment, I think we started last Tuesday night, and there's six people there exploring faith. It's exciting to see, isn't it? Cam mentioned that on August the 16th, I think it is, we have our Testimony Baptism Sunday. I would love to have from the 10 a.m. community, there are people exploring baptism, but I would love to have a couple of people who would be willing to share a brief testimony about how they've been praying for and seeking to tell their story with someone they've written their name down, whether it's on one of the doors or not. So if that's you, I would love you to come up to me afterwards and say, Andrew, I was praying for Fred. This is how it's been going. I'd love to hear that. And I'm sure our church community would love to be encouraged. So if that's you, please let us know. Over these 6 weeks, here's a few of the topics that we're planning to cover. We're going to cover a week today. Well, today's really called Thinking About Life, because life is worth thinking about. Next week, we're going to look at religion or faith. You know, is there more than one way to God? Is Jesus really the only way? What's the difference between different faiths? The following week, we're going to look at, if God is good, why so much evil? Probably the question that gets asked more than any other question. Christianity changes lives. We're going to look at the way in which following Jesus has an incredibly positive outcome for the world and for individuals when people follow Jesus. We're going to be asking the question, is the church good or evil? Famously, a number of years ago, a guy by the name of Christopher Hitchens wrote a book called Religion Poisons Everything. Is the church good or evil? And the final week, I'm actually hoping that we will have the opportunity to do kind of like a Q&A week. Because I know that we can't hit all the topics in one kind of hit. Maybe you've got a question that you've always wanted an answer, or someone's asked you this question and you go, I just don't know how to share that. We're going to provide an opportunity for you to have some questions, and we're going to have some people who have got some wisdom to give some answers for what we have. I want to give also a quick little slide up here. If you're looking for kind of further information, here's a very short list of recommended materials for you, okay? If you're looking for kind of classic information, one of the most influential writers of the 20th century, C.S. Lewis, has written a whole variety of books on a whole variety of different topics. They're well and worth exploring. In a contemporary world, Tim Keller, I think, is unsurpassed if you're looking for discussions around, again, many different ideas, evil, work, joy, all sorts of different life discussions. If you're looking from an Australian perspective, John Dixon, Dr. John Dixon, is a wonderful Christian thinker and has a whole lot of information. And if you listen to a podcast, the Undeceptions podcast, if you Google Undeceptions on your podcast, that has many, many different topics and interviews that are well worth listening to. So that's my hit list of recommendations. I'm not sure if you caught this, but Artemis II was a historic crewed lunar flyby. It launched from Florida not that long ago, on April the 1st, 2026, at 22:35 Greenwich Mean Time. There were four astronauts on board: Commander Reid Wiseman, pilot Victor Glover, mission specialist Christina Koch, and a Canadian mission specialist, Jeremy Hansen. They spent 10 days hurtling around the far side of the moon before they splashed safely down in the Pacific Ocean at 6 minutes past midnight on April the 11th. They flew more than 406,000 kilometres from Earth, and on their re-entry, they reached speeds equivalent to 32 times the speed of sound, about 11 kilometres per second. That's a quick way to shorten your way to work, isn't it? All in all, they travelled more than 1 million kilometres, further than any other manned spacecraft in history. You know, one of the remarkable outcomes as documented in space travel like this is called the overview effect. The overview effect is sometimes referred to as a cognitive shift, a new way of thinking. It's been reported by many astronauts when they view the Earth from space. The researchers characterise it in this way. They say it's a state of awe, self-transcendent qualities, a striking visual stimulus. And outcomes of it end up things like this, an increased appreciation and perception of beauty, unexpected and overwhelming emotions. And numbers of them report an increased sense of connection to other people and to the Earth as a whole. The effect causes changes in that observer's self-concept, their identity and their value system that can be radically transformative. Can I say that's a long-winded way of saying when you're in space and look at the Earth, it causes you to take a deep breath and contemplate life. The overview effect doesn't simply change what people see, it changes the questions they ask. You know, most of us rarely stop long enough to ask life's biggest questions, don't we? Most of us spend more time looking down at our phones than looking up. But looking up is maybe the most important thing we can do. When was the last time you stopped long enough to think about life? I remember on one occasion, a number of years ago, I used to go into a local high school and take a whole bunch of classes and do some kind of Christian education. And I remember on one occasion, I had a whole bunch of year nine boys. You know the school loves you when they give you year nine boys. And I love that group of year nine boys, and they were everything that year nine boys should be. And on one particular occasion, this boy goes, Tom, and my name is Andrew, but I look like a C-grade celebrity called Tom Green, and so they would call me Tom. He goes, Tom, he says, do you ever get mad if we don't trust Jesus, or if we don't believe in Jesus? That's a good question coming from a year nine boy, first of all. After taking a moment, I responded to him. I said, no, I don't get angry, but I do get disappointed if you don't ask big questions of life, if you don't try to understand who Jesus is. Have you thought about life, considered questions of who Jesus is? Who's wearing glasses today? Put your hand up if you're wearing glasses. Well, actually, I want to tell you today that, in fact, all of us are wearing glasses. We all wear glasses that shape how we view the world. We all wear glasses that shape how we think about life. The glasses that we wear are influenced by many different things: our age, our gender, our ethnicity, our religion, our family we were raised in, and many other things. Primarily, they're shaped by what we believe. Our glasses are how we view the world, our worldview, for want of a better word. Our worldview answers important questions, questions like this: where did we come from? Why are we here? What's wrong with the world? What's going to happen when I die? What should I live for? And every person has a way of looking and answering those questions. Whether we are a Christian, whether an atheist, whether we're Buddhist, agnostic, we all try to have answers for these questions, don't we? Every worldview tries to explain these things. Why is there something instead of nothing? Why is there beauty? Why is there evil? What gives us hope? Well, Christians believe that all of those questions find their answers in Jesus. You see, if Christianity is true, ultimately it lives and dies, stands and falls on Jesus. You know, in the first century, the Apostle Paul was in the great learned city of Athens. And he looked around at people who were answering those same questions. You can read the entire passage. It goes from Acts 17 about maybe like verse 16 to verse 34. I'm not going to read it all out today, but it tells us that while Paul was in Athens, he looked around and he was troubled by all the things that he saw in the city. And then it tells us in verse 18, he says, he had a debate with some of the Epicurean and the Stoic philosophers. When he told them about Jesus and his resurrection, they said, what's this babbler trying to say with these strange ideas? They were talking about how they view the world. What's the things that are important in the world? It tells us in 19, it tells us that the learned people, they took Paul to the leaders of the city. Tell us about this new teaching. They wanted to know. They were interested. You see, people are interested in answers to those big questions of life, aren't they? Because we all search for them. And then it tells us in the last part of the part I've got up on the next screen on verse 23, it says, one of your altars, this is what Paul says. He says, I saw around the city, he said, one of your altars had this inscription, to an unknown God. He says, I know who that God is. See, the unknown God was their kind of their expression of trying to find meaning, trying to find answers to the most important questions. People are searching for answers. And if Christianity is true, it stands and falls on who Jesus is. Look around the world, of which yourself, myself, which our neighbours, our work colleagues, our children, our parents, our friends. Look at the world in which we live. We have more than ever, don't we? More than ever. And yet somehow anxiety is skyrocketing. We are more connected, and yet we're lonelier. We celebrate freedom, and yet many people have no idea what freedom even means. I mean, how do you make sense of it? Declining trust in people and institutions, loneliness, mental health crisis, pessimism about the future. How do you make sense of it? And different worldviews seem to be kind of failing. So individual expressionism. We need each other. Individual expressionism says that I determine the world, but you know what? People are lonely. They realize more than ever that they need others. Individual expression is dying. Consumerism. The more goods that I have, the more satisfied that I will be. Deeply unsatisfying. Even scientism. Scientism is great for explaining how, but it never answers why. And I could go on. People are asking these questions more than ever. Maybe you're asking those same questions. Or maybe you know people in your life who are asking those questions. We feel it around us. We feel our society is deeply unsatisfied, searching for answers. So how do you explain the world? How do you explain what is happening? How do you explain life? The dominant thinking in the secular world has been what we might label secular humanism. It's shifted the focus from God controlling the world to us controlling the future. Science and reason have the answers, so it goes. And so we humans should be responsible to act against injustice, to build a better world, because we don't need God. I mean, that was the idea. Humans can flourish without God or religion. One of the fascinating cultural shifts of the last decade is that many people, many public intellectuals, have begun saying something unexpected. They don't actually believe that Christianity is true, but they increasingly believe that Christianity is good. The German philosopher Nietzsche said, anticipated this problem nearly 140 years ago. He wrote these things. He said, when one gives up the Christian faith, one pulls the right to Christian morality out from under one's feet. This morality is by no means self-evident. Christianity is a system, a whole view of things thought out together. And when Nietzsche made this argument, he was dismissed as a madman. the liberal world, the secular world, continue to spin a narrative that humans could control the world, that we didn't need God. The modern world was the result of science and thinking. But the truth is that Christianity is an entire belief system. You can't just pluck one part of it and have the rest. Let me ask you this question, because this is a question I love to ask other people in our world. Do you believe in things like human dignity? What about human rights? Do you believe in human rights? Equality. Equality of men and women. What about care for the poor? Do you believe in care for the poor? Forgiveness. You like forgiveness? Is this a good idea? What about compassion? Well, all of those ideas, they all emerge from Christianity. They don't come from Rome. They don't come from Greece. They don't come from any other society. They're Christian beliefs and practices. They flow from a loving God, a loving Creator. The fruit, the values, those ideas only make sense because of the root where they come from. A leading historian, English historian by the name of Tom Holland, is not a Christian. He's a very well-known historian. And yet after his many years of studying ancient history, he reached an unexpected conclusion. He said the values that modern Western society treasures, human dignity, equality, compassion, he recognizes they don't come from those ancient societies. He wrote an article entitled, "Why I Was Wrong About Christianity." And he confessed that he'd lost faith in his atheistic secular narrative. When it came to his morals and ethics, Holland put it this way, he learned to accept that he was thoroughly and proudly Christian. As he puts it, even those who reject Christianity often continue living on the values Christianity gave them. It's fascinating that the people who were the strongest critics are now acknowledging that the deepest values they desire come from Jesus. You see, every worldview collides with reality at some point. Think about when you ask big questions of life. You don't ask, why am I here when life is going well, do you? That's not the natural tendency. You ask it after someone's funeral, after the cancer diagnosis, your divorce, or when you've lost your job, or when you're sitting beside your child who's lying in a bed at a hospital. That's when you ask questions, because they're the moments when what we believe about life come to a head. I want to say to you that Christianity explains life. Look around at the brokenness and the messed up world that we live in. Christianity alone offers a clear understanding. It tells us that God created the heavens and the earth. That's the answer to the question, where do we come from? Why are we here? God made the world, a world filled with beauty and music and art, a world that is good. He created a life made for purpose, a life which was meant to have meaning. So people create, they work in meaningful ways, we take on great challenges and adventures, life to be experienced to the full. We want to live as humans with dignity and worth. People who laugh with each other, who care for one another, who love one another, live in deep community with relationships that are valuable. But Genesis 3 tells us about how that world got broken. What God created fell. Because our world is messed up, isn't it? It explains why cancer exists. Why being betrayed hurts. Why wars seem endless. And why the world seems broken. Not because creation failed or because matter is evil. But because humans rebelled against God. I mean, how else do we try to understand that tensions that exist in our world? That there's beauty and also cruelty. There's love but also selfishness, justice and oppression. Well, Christianity explains that. It tells us that there's a reason for both the beauty and the brokenness in our world. Andrew, you might say, I hear that story. I hear the brokenness, the failure. I can see that it's messed up, but I can't do anything about it. Well, the Christian story tells us that God doesn't abandon creation. In fact, Jesus enters history. This is not a distant God who is removed from the world and creation. No, this is a God who steps into the mess, who experiences the pain and suffering, who understands. And it's a God who has a plan of redemption, of a second chance. There's a cross, there's a resurrection, there's hope, there's new life. The second chance we all need. And that reaches a culmination. In fact, if you'll read your Bible, at the very end of your Bible in Revelation 21 is the culmination of all things, the ultimate answer to the purpose and meaning of life. Because God will restore all things. History has a destination. You see, this is so different from the questions and the answers that so many of us have. Because for many, life is just random. It has no meaning, no greater purpose. But God says there is a greater purpose. It does have meaning. History tells us that it heads towards a destination. You know, we've all done a jigsaw puzzle, haven't we? Imagine taking an enormous jigsaw puzzle, maybe like a 5,000 pieces, and dumping it on a table, but I didn't give you the picture on the box. You don't know where anything belongs. Christianity doesn't remove the mystery of the world, but it gives you the picture on the box. Suddenly, beauty and pain and love and death and purpose begin to make sense. You see, Christianity explains both the beauty and the brokenness of our world, because it reveals the God who created and redeemed and restores all things. You know, Paul, when he was speaking in Athens, said, "You're looking for an unknown God. I know this God. This is Jesus who lived and breathed and died for you. This is the God who loves you, who calls you to follow him, who died for you so that you might experience mercy and forgiveness to have meaning in life." As an Ethiopian lady by the name of Ayaan Hirsi Ali, she's one of the world's best-known atheist thinkers. And she grew up in a very strict Muslim culture, and she rejected it for having no value. She embraced atheism and was embraced by the atheist thinkers of the world. But Hirsi Ali became a Christian in 2023. She described how she'd seen that the world needs Christian values, how what is good in society flows from Jesus' teachings. And when she wrote about her conversion, she recognized that she needed to go beyond just seeing Jesus and Christianity as being good for society. She felt she had reached rock bottom with absolutely nothing left to lose, so she desperately turned to pray. And through this, she described this transformative spiritual awakening. In fact, on one interview, she describes it to Richard Dawkins, who was one of her colleagues in this world. She described it as this feeling of dying and being born again. And she writes, "I still have a great deal to learn about Christianity. I discover a little more at church each Sunday. But I've recognized in my own long journey through a wilderness of fear and doubt, there's a better way to manage the challenge of existence than either Islam or unbelief had to offer." You know, I want to say to you today that life is worth thinking about. No. It's worth thinking about. Our society has made incredible advances, medicine, technology, education, and yet every single person, the people whose name you wrote on these boards, the people whose names exist in your heart, we all ask these questions, don't we? Where do we find those answers? The astronauts on Artemis II, they would look back at the world and see it differently. And my prayer today is that you might begin seeing yourself and life differently. That you might understand that you're not an accident, that you might understand that life is not random, that the world is created, that you can be known and loved by a God, that you could be invited into God's story. There's purpose and meaning to every life, from the newborn to the 100-year-old great-grandmother, because God created all people with this greater purpose. See, Christianity doesn't just tell us how to live. It tells us who we are. Life's big questions deserve thoughtful answers. And I want to say to you that Christianity offers the most compelling understanding, the most compelling knowledge of what it is to live, to have meaning and truth and hope and dignity. You know, maybe today, even as you sit here today, you find yourself somewhere caught between curiosity and belief. Maybe for some of us, you don't even call yourself a Christian. That's okay. Can I encourage you not to ignore the big questions of life? Read one of the Gospels about Jesus. Ask your questions. Maybe you want to join into one of the Alpha groups that gives a safe place for them. Come back next week or talk with someone afterwards. Because Christianity ultimately is not about a religion. Ultimately, it's about Jesus. Will you consider Christianity? Let's pray together, shall we? For our God, I want to thank you that you are the creator, the author of life, the author of love, that you hold this world in your hands. Father, I thank you that you have created us in such a way that we have this deep desire to know what life is about. And Father, I want to pray for people today, whether they are here with us now, whether they're watching online. I want to even pray for the ones who might have a conversation which comes out of today's talk. Father, I pray that they would know you. That they, in the midst of asking those big questions, would find the big answer. Father, I pray for people today who are nervous about trusting you. That your Spirit would give them a boldness in their heart. And that they would come to know you.